her on the floor, with his arm around her trembling shoulders. She seemed to relax slightly at his touch, which left him with the oddest feeling, almost a sense of pride that he had been the one to be able to help her. That, and a bone-deep feeling of relief, because it was killing him to see her in such torment. He whispered soothing words in her ear and softly caressed her shoulder, trying to comfort her with his mere presence. And slowly, very slowly, he had no idea how many minutes he sat under that table with her, he could feel her muscles begin to unwind. Her skin lost that awful clammy feeling, and her breathing, while still rushed, no longer sounded quite so panicked. Finally, when he felt she might be ready, he touched two fingers to the underside of her chin, using the softest pressure imaginable to lift her face so that he could see her eyes. "Look at me, Kate," he whispered, his voice gentle but suffused with authority. "If you just look at me, you will know that you are safe." The tiny muscles around her eyes quivered for a good 15 seconds before her lids finally fluttered. She was trying to open her eyes, but they were resisting. Anthony had little experience with this sort of terror, but it seemed to make sense to him that her eyes just wouldn't want to open, that they simply wouldn't want to see whatever it was that so frightened her. After several more seconds of fluttering, she finally managed to open her eyes all the way and met his gaze. Anthony felt as if he'd been punched in the gut. If eyes were truly the windows to the soul, something had shattered within Kate Sheffield that night. She looked haunted, hunted, and utterly lost and bewildered. "I don't remember," she whispered, her voice barely audible. He took her hand, which he'd never relinquished his hold on, and brought it to his lips again. He pressed a gentle, almost paternal kiss on her palm.
"You don't remember what?"
She shook her head. "I don't know."
"Do you remember coming to the library?"
She nodded.
"Do you remember the storm?"
She closed her eyes for a moment, as if the act of keeping them open had required more energy than she possessed. "It's still storming." Anthony nodded. That was true. The rain was still beating against the windows with just as much ferocity as before, but it had been several minutes since the last bout of thunder and lightning. She looked at him with desperate eyes. "I can't... I don't..." Anthony squeezed her hand.
"You don't have to say anything."
He felt her body shudder and relax, then heard her whisper, "Thank you."
"Do you want me to talk to you?"
he asked. She shut her eyes, not as tightly as before, and nodded. He smiled, even though he knew she could not see it. But maybe she could sense it. Maybe she'd be able to hear his smile in his voice.
"Let's see," he mused. "What can I tell you about?"
"Tell me about the house," she whispered.
"This house?" he asked in surprise.
She nodded.
"Very well," he replied,
feeling rather absurdly pleased that she was interested in the one pile of stone and mortar that meant so much to him.
"I grew up here, you know."
"Your mother told me." Anthony felt a spark of something warm and powerful in his chest as she spoke. He'd told her she didn't have to say anything, and she'd been quite obviously thankful for that. But now she was actually taking part in the conversation. Surely that had to mean she was beginning to feel better. If she'd open her eyes, if they weren't sitting under a table, it might seem almost normal. And it was stunning how much he wanted to be the one to make her feel better.
"Shall I tell you about the time my brother drowned my sister's favourite doll?" he asked.
She shook her head, then flinched when the wind picked up, causing the rain to beat against the windows with new ferocity. But she steeled her chin and said, "Tell me something about you."
"All right,"
Anthony said slowly, trying to ignore the vague, uncomfortable feeling that spread in his chest. It was so much easier to tell a tale of his many siblings than to talk about himself. "Tell me about your father." He froze.
"My father?
She smiled, but he was too shocked by her request to notice. "You must have had one," she said. Anthony's throat began to feel very tight. He didn't often talk about his father, not even with his family. He'd told himself that it was because it was so much water under the bridge. Edmund had been dead for over 10 years, but the truth was that some things simply hurt too much, and there were some wounds that didn't heal, not even in 10 years.
He was a great man, he said softly. A great father. I loved him very much.
Kate turned to look at him. The first time she'd met his gaze since he'd lifted her chin with his fingers many minutes earlier.
Your mother speaks of him with great affection. That was why I asked.
We all loved him, he said simply,
turning his head and staring out across the room. His eyes focused on the leg of a chair, but he didn't really see it. He didn't see anything but the memories in his mind.
He was the finest father a boy could ever want.
When did he die?
11 years ago, in the summer, when I was 18, right before I left for Oxford.
That's a difficult time for a man to lose his father, she murmured.
He turned sharply to look at her.
Any time is a difficult time for a man to lose his father.
Of course, she quickly agreed. But some times are worse than others, I think. And surely it must be different for boys and girls. My father passed on 5 years ago, and I miss him terribly. But I don't think it's the same.
He didn't have to voice his question. It was there in his eyes.
My father was wonderful,
Kate explained, her eyes warming as she reminisced.
Kind and gentle, but stern when he needed to be. But a boy's father, well, he has to teach his son how to be a man. And to lose a father at 18, when you're just learning what all that means.
She let out a long exhale.
It's probably presumptuous for me even to discuss it, as I'm not a man, and therefore couldn't possibly put myself in your shoes. But I think...
She paused, pursing her lips as she considered her words.
Well, I just think it would be very difficult.
My brothers were 16, 12, and 2, Anthony said softly.
I would imagine it was difficult for them as well, she replied, although your youngest brother probably doesn't remember him.
Anthony shook his head. Kate smiled wistfully.
I don't remember my mother either. It's an odd thing.
How old were you when she died?
It was on my 3rd birthday. My father married Mary only a few months later. He didn't observe the proper mourning period, and it shocked some of the neighbours. But he thought I needed a mother more than he needed to follow etiquette.
For the first time, Anthony wondered what would have happened if it had been his mother who had died young, leaving his father with a house full of children, several of them infants and toddlers. Edmund wouldn't have had an easy time of it. None of them would have. Not that it had been easy for Violet, but at least she'd had Anthony, who'd been able to step in and try to act the role of surrogate father to his younger siblings. If Violet had died, the Bridgertons would have been left completely without a maternal figure. After all, Daphne, the eldest of the Bridgerton daughters, had been only 10 at Edmund's death, and Anthony was certain that his father would not have remarried. No matter how his father would have wanted a mother for his children, he would not have been able to take another wife.
How did your mother die?
Anthony asked, surprised by the depth of his curiosity.
Influenza. Or at least that's what they thought. It could have been any sort of lung fever.
She rested her chin on her hand. It was very quick, I'm told. My father said I fell ill as well, although mine was a mild case. Anthony thought about the son he hoped to sire, the very reason he had finally decided to marry.
Do you miss a parent you never knew?
He whispered. Kate considered his question for some time. His voice had held a hoarse urgency that told her there was something critical about her reply. Why, she couldn't imagine, but something about her childhood clearly rang a chord within his heart.
Yes, she finally answered, but not in the way you would think. You can't really miss her, because you didn't know her. But there's still a hole in your life, a big, empty spot. And you know who was supposed to fit there, but you can't remember her. And you don't know what she was like. And so you don't know how she would have filled that hole. Her lips curved into a sad sort of smile. Does this make any sense?
Anthony nodded. It makes a great deal of sense.
I think losing a parent, once you know and love them, is harder, Kate added. And I know, because I've lost both.
I'm sorry, he said quietly.
It's all right, she assured him. That old adage, time heals all wounds, it's really true.
He stared at her intently, and she could tell from his expression that he didn't agree.
It really is more difficult when you're older. You're blessed because you had the chance to know them, but the pain of the loss is more intense.
It was as if I'd lost an arm,
Anthony whispered. She nodded soberly, somehow knowing that he hadn't spoken of his sorrow to many people. She licked nervously at her lips, which had gone quite dry. Funny how that happened. All the rain in the world pounding outside, and here she was, parched as a bone.
Perhaps it was better for me, then, Kate said softly, losing my mother so young. And Mary has been wonderful. She loves me as a daughter. In fact,
she broke off, startled by the sudden wetness in her eyes. When she finally found her voice again, it was an emotional whisper.
In fact, she has never once treated me differently than she has Edwina. I don't think I could have loved my own mother any better.
Anthony's eyes burned into hers.
I'm so glad, he said,
his voice low and intense. Kate swallowed.
She's so funny about it sometimes. She visits my mother's grave, just to tell her how I'm doing. It's very sweet, actually. When I was small, I would go with her, to tell my mother how Mary was doing.
Anthony smiled.
And was your report favourable?
Always.
They sat in companionable silence for a moment, both staring at the candle flame, watching the wax drip down the taper to the candlestick. When the fourth drop of wax rolled down the candle, sliding along the column until it hardened in place, Kate turned to Anthony and said,
I'm sure I sound insufferably optimistic, but I think there must be some master plan in life.
He turned to her and quirked a brow.
Everything really does work out in the end, she explained. I lost my mother, but I gained Mary, and a sister I love dearly, and...
A flash of lightning lit the room. Kate bit her lip, trying to force slow and even breaths through her nose. The thunder would come, but she'd be ready for it, and the room shook with noise, and she was able to keep her eyes open. She let out a long exhale and allowed herself a proud smile. That hadn't been so difficult. It certainly hadn't been fun, but it hadn't been impossible. It might have been Anthony's comforting presence next to her, or simply that the storm was moving away, but she'd made it through without her heart jumping through her skin.
"Are you all right?" Anthony asked.
She looked over at him, and something inside of her melted at the concerned look on his face. Whatever he'd done in the past, however they'd argued and fought, in this moment he truly cared about her.
"Yes," she said,
hearing surprise in her voice, even though she hadn't intended it.
"Yes, I think I am."
He gave her hand a squeeze.
"How long have you been like this?"
"Tonight, or in my life?"
"Both."
"Tonight, since the first clap of thunder. I get quite nervous when it begins to rain, but as long as there is no thunder and lightning, I'm all right. It's not the rain, actually, which upsets me, but just the fear that it might grow into something more."
She swallowed, licking her dry lips before she continued.
"To answer your other query, I can't remember a time I wasn't terrified by storms. It's simply a part of me. It's quite foolish, I know."
"It's not foolish," he interjected.
"You're very sweet to think so," she said, with a sheepish half-smile. "But you're wrong. Nothing could be more foolish than to fear something with no reason."
"Sometimes," Antony said in a halting voice, "sometimes there are reasons for our fears that we can't quite explain. Sometimes it's just something we feel in our bones, something we know to be true, but would sound foolish to anyone else."
Kate stared at him intently, watching his dark eyes in the flickering candlelight, and catching her breath at the flash of pain she saw in the brief second before he looked away. And she knew, with every fibre of her being, that he wasn't speaking of intangibles. He was talking about his own fears, something very specific that haunted him every minute of every day. Something she knew she did not have the right to ask him about, but she wished, oh, how she wished, that when he was ready to face his fears, she could be the one to help him. But that wasn't to be. He would marry someone else, maybe even Edwina, and only his wife would have the right to talk to him about such personal matters.
"I think I might be ready to go upstairs," she said.
Suddenly it was too hard to be in his presence, too painful to know that he would belong to someone else. His lips quirked into a boyish smile.
"Are you saying I might finally crawl out from under this table?"
"Oh, goodness!"
She clapped one of her hands to her cheek in a sheepish expression.
"I'm so sorry. I stopped noticing where we were sitting ages ago, I'm afraid. What a ninny you must think me."
He shook his head, still smiling.
"Never a ninny, Kate. Even when I thought you the most insufferable female creature on the planet, I had no doubts about your intelligence."
Kate, who had been in the process of scooting out from under the table, paused.
"I just don't know if I should feel complimented or insulted by that statement."
"Probably both," he admitted. "But for friendship's sake, let's decide upon complimented."
She turned to look at him, aware that she presented an awkward picture on her hands and knees. But the moment seemed too important to delay.
"Then we are friends," she whispered.
He nodded as he stood.
"Hard to believe, but I think we are."
Kate smiled as she took his helping hand and rose to her feet.
"I'm glad. You're really not the devil I'd originally thought you."
One of his brows lifted, and his face suddenly took on a very wicked expression.
"Well, maybe you are,"
she amended, thinking he probably was every bit the rake and rogue that society had painted him.
"But maybe you're also a rather nice person as well."
"Nice seems so bland," he mused.
"Nice," she said emphatically, "is nice. And given what I used to think of you, you ought to be delighted by the compliment."
He laughed.
"One thing about you, Kate Sheffield, is that you are never boring."
"Boring is so bland," she quipped.
He smiled, a true grin, not that ironic curve he used at society functions, but the real thing. Kate's throat suddenly felt very tight.
"I'm afraid I cannot walk you back to your room," he said. "If someone should come across us at this hour..."
Kate nodded. They'd forged an unlikely friendship, but she didn't want to get trapped into marriage with him, right? And it went without saying that he didn't want to marry her. He motioned to her.
"And especially with you dressed like that."
Kate looked down and gasped, yanking her robe more tightly around her. She'd completely forgotten that she wasn't properly dressed. Her nightclothes certainly weren't risque or revealing, especially with her thick robe, but they were nightclothes.
"Will you be all right?"
he asked softly.
"It's still raining."
Kate stopped and listened to the rain, which had softened to a gentle patter against the windows.
"I think the storm is over."
He nodded and peered out into the hall.
"It's empty," he said.
"I should go."
He stepped aside to let her pass. She moved forward, but when she reached the doorway, she stopped and turned around.
"Lord Bridgerton?"
"Antony," he said. "You should call me Antony. I believe I've already called you Kate."
"You did?"
"When I found you,"
he waved a hand.
I don't think you heard anything I said.
You're probably right. She smiled hesitantly. Anthony.
His name sounded strange on her tongue. He leaned forward slightly, an odd, almost devilish light in his eyes.
Kate, he said in return.
I just wanted to say thank you, she said, for helping me tonight.
She cleared her throat.
It would have been a great deal more difficult without you.
I didn't do anything, he said gruffly.
No, you did everything.
And then, before she'd be tempted to stay, she hurried down the hall and up the stairs. Chapter 13. There is little to report in London, with so many people away in Kent at the Bridgerton house party. This author can only imagine all the gossip that will soon reach town. There will be a scandal, yes. There is always a scandal at a house party. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 4th of May, 1814. The following morning was the sort that usually follows a violent storm, bright and clear, but with a fine damp mist that settled cold and refreshing on the skin. Anthony was oblivious to the weather, having spent most of the night staring into the darkness and seeing nothing but Kate's face. He'd finally fallen asleep as the first streaks of dawn fingered across the sky. By the time he woke, it was well past noon, but he did not feel rested. His body was suffused with a strange combination of exhaustion and nervous energy. His eyes felt heavy and dull in their sockets, and yet his fingers kept drumming the bed, inching toward the edge as if they alone could pull him out and to his feet. Finally, when his stomach growled so loudly that he could swear he saw the plaster on the ceiling shake, he staggered upright and pulled on his robe. With a wide, loud yawn, he moved to the window, not because he was looking for anyone or anything in particular, but simply because the view was better than anything else in his room. And yet, in the quarter second before he looked down and gazed upon the grounds, he somehow knew what he would see. Kate, walking slowly across the lawn, far more slowly than he'd ever seen her walk before. Usually, she walked as if in a race. She was much too far away for him to see her face, just a sliver of her profile, the curve of her cheek, and yet he could not take his eyes off of her. There was so much magic in her form, a strange grace in the way her arms swung as she walked, an artistry in the posture of her shoulders. She was walking toward the garden, he realized, and he knew he had to join her. The weather remained in its contradictory state for most of the day, dividing the house party neatly in half, between those who insisted the bright sunshine beckoned outdoor play and those who eschewed the wet grass and damp air for the warmer, drier clime of the drawing-room. Kate was firmly in the former group, although she was not in the mood for company. Her mind was in far too reflective a mood to make polite conversation with people she barely knew, and so she stole away once again to Lady Bridgerton's spectacular gardens and found herself a quiet spot on a bench near the rose arbour. The stone was cold and just a little bit damp beneath her bottom, but she hadn't slept particularly well the night before, and she was tired, and it was better than standing. And it was, she realised with a sigh, just about the only place where she might be left to her own company. If she remained in the house, she'd surely be roped into joining the group of ladies chatting in the drawing-room while they wrote correspondence to friends and family. Or worse, she'd be stuck with a coterie who'd retired to the orangery to pursue their embroidery. As for the outdoor enthusiasts, they'd also broken into two groups. One had hied off to the village to shop and see whatever sights there were to be found, and the other was taking a constitutional walk to the lake. As Kate had no interest in shopping, and she was already quite familiar with the lake, she'd eschewed their company as well. Hence her solitude in the garden. She sat for several minutes, just staring off into space, her eyes focusing somewhat blindly on the tightly furled bud of a nearby rose. It was nice to be alone, where she didn't have to cover her mouth or stifle the loud, sleepy noises she made when she yawned. Nice to be alone, where no one was going to comment on the dark circles beneath her eyes or her uncommon quietude and lack of conversation. Nice to be alone, where she could sit and attempt to sort through her muddle of thoughts about the Viscount. It was a daunting task, and one she'd rather put off, but it had to be done. But there really wasn't all that much to sort out, because everything she had learned in the past few days pointed her conscience in one singular direction, and she knew that she could no longer oppose Bridgerton's courtship of Edwina. In the past few days, he'd proven himself sensitive, caring, and principled. Even, she thought with a glimmer of a smile, as she recalled the light in Penelope Featherington's eyes when he'd saved her from the verbal talons of Cressida Cooper, heroic. He was devoted to family. He had used his social position and power not to lord over others, but simply to spare another person insult. He had helped her through one of her phobic attacks with a grace and sensitivity that, now that she could view it with a clear head, stunned her. He might have been a rake and a rogue. He might still be a rake and a rogue. But clearly his behaviour to those ends did not define the man. And the only objection Kate had to his marrying Edwina was... She swallowed painfully. There was a lump the size of a cannonball in her throat. Because, deep in her heart, she wanted him for herself. But that was selfish, and Kate had spent her life trying to be unselfish, and she knew she could never ask Edwina not to marry Anthony for such a reason. If Edwina knew that Kate was even the tiniest bit infatuated with the Viscount, she would put an end to his courtship at once. And what purpose would that serve? Anthony would just find some other beautiful, eligible woman to pursue. There were plenty to choose from in London. It wasn't as if he were going to ask her instead. So what would she have to gain by preventing a match between him and Edwina? Nothing, except the agony of having to see him married to her sister. And that would fade in time, wouldn't it? It had to. She herself had just said the night before that time truly did heal all wounds. Besides, it would probably hurt just as much to see him married to some other lady. The only difference would be that she would not have to see him at holidays and christenings and the like. Kate let out a sigh, a long, sad, weary sigh that stole every breath from her lungs and left her shoulders sagging, her posture drooping, her heart aching. And then a voice filled her ears. His voice, low and smooth, like a warm swirl around her.
"My goodness, you sound serious."
Kate stood so suddenly that the backs of her legs knocked into the edge of the stone bench, setting her off balance and causing her to stumble. "My lord," she blurted out. His lips curved with the barest hint of a smile.
"I thought I might find you here."
Her eyes widened at the realization that he'd deliberately sought her out. Her heart started beating faster as well, but at least that was something she could keep hidden from him. He glanced briefly down to the stone bench, signalling that she should feel free to resume her seat.
"Actually, I saw you from my window. I wanted to make certain that you were feeling better," he said quietly.
Kate sat down, disappointment rising in her throat. He was merely being polite. Of course he was merely being polite. Silly of her to dream, even for a moment, that there might be something more. He was, she'd finally realised, a nice person, and any nice person would want to make sure that she was feeling better after what had transpired the night before.
"I am," she replied. "Very much. Thank you."
If he thought anything of her broken staccato sentences, he did not make any discernible reaction of it.
"I'm glad," he said as he sat beside her. "I worried about you for much of the night."
Her heart, which had already been pounding much too quickly, skipped a beat.
"You did?"
"Of course. How could I not?"
Kate swallowed. There it was, that infernal politeness again. Oh, she didn't doubt that his interest and concern were real and true. It just hurt that they were prompted by his natural kindness of spirit, not any special feeling for her. Not that she had expected anything different, but she'd found it impossible not to hope anyway.
"I'm sorry to have bothered you so late at night," she said quietly,
mostly because she thought she should. In truth, she was desperately glad that he'd been there.
"Don't be silly," he said,
straightening slightly and fixing upon her a rather stern sort of look.
"I hate to think of you all alone during a storm. I'm glad I was there to comfort you."
"I'm usually alone during storms," she admitted.
Anthony frowned.
"Your family does not offer you comfort during storms."
She looked a little sheepish as she said,
"They do not know that I still fear them."
He nodded slowly.
"I see. There are times..."
Anthony paused to clear his throat, a diversionary tactic he frequently employed when he wasn't quite certain what it was he wanted to say.
"I think you would gain comfort by seeking the aid of your mother and sister, but I know..."
He cleared his throat again. He knew well the singularly strange sensation of loving one's family to distraction, and yet not feeling quite able to share one's deepest and most intractable fears. It brought on an uncanny sense of isolation, of being remarkably alone in a loud and loving crowd.
"I know," he said again,
his voice purposely even and subdued,
"that it can often be most difficult to share one's fears with those one most deeply loves."
Her brown eyes, wise and warm and undeniably perceptive, focused on his. For one split moment, he had the bizarre thought that she somehow knew everything about him, every last detail, from the moment of his birth to his certainty of his own death. It seemed, in that second, with her face tipped up toward his and her lips slightly parted, that she, more than anyone else who would ever walk this earth, truly knew him. It was thrilling. But more than that, it was terrifying.
"You're a very wise man," she whispered.
It took him a moment to remember what they'd been talking about. Ah, yes. Fears. He knew fears. He tried to laugh off her compliment.
"Most of the time I'm a very foolish man."
She shook her head.
"No. I think you've hit the nail squarely on its proverbial head. Of course I would not tell Mary and Edwina. I do not want to trouble them."
She chewed on her lip for a moment, a funny little movement with her teeth that he found oddly seductive.
"Of course," she added, "if I am to be true to myself, I must confess that my motives are not entirely unselfish. Surely an equal part of my reluctance lies in my desire not to be seen as weak."
"That's not such a terrible sin," he murmured.
"Not as far as sins go, I suppose," Kate said with a smile. "But I would hazard a guess that it is one from which you, too, suffer."
He didn't say anything,
just nodded his assent.
"We all have our roles to play in life," she continued, "and mine has always been to be strong and sensible. Cringing under a table during an electrical storm is neither."
"Your sister," he said quietly, "is probably a great deal stronger than you think."
Her eyes flew to his face. Was he trying to tell her that he'd fallen in love with Edwina? He'd complimented her sister's grace and beauty before, but never had he referred to her inner person. Kate's eyes searched his for as long as she dared, but she found nothing that revealed his true feelings.
"I did not mean to imply that she wasn't," she finally replied. "But I am her older sister. I have always had to be strong for her, whereas she has only had to be strong for herself."
She brought her eyes back up to his, only to find that he was staring at her with an odd intensity, almost as if he could see past her skin and into her very soul.
"You are the oldest as well," she said. "I'm sure you know what I mean."
He nodded, and his eyes looked amused and resigned at the same time.
"Exactly."
She gave him an answering smile, the kind that passed between people who know similar experiences and trials, and as she felt herself growing more at ease next to him, almost as if she could sink into his side and bury herself against the warmth of his body, She knew that she could put off her task no longer. She had to tell him that she'd withdrawn her opposition to his match with Edwina. It wasn't fair to anyone to keep it to herself, just because she wanted to keep him to herself, if only for a few perfect moments, right here in the gardens. She took a deep breath, straightened her shoulders, and turned to him. He looked at her expectantly. It was obvious, after all, that she had something to say. Kate's lips parted, but nothing came out. "Yes?" he asked, looking rather amused. "My lord," she blurted out. "Anthony," he corrected gently. "Anthony," she repeated, wondering why the use of his given name made this all the more difficult. "I did need to speak with you about something." He smiled.
"I'd gathered."
Her eyes became inexplicably fastened on her right foot, which was tracing half moons on the packed dirt of the path.
It's about Edwina."
Anthony's brows rose, and he followed her gaze to her foot, which had left half moons behind and was now drawing squiggly lines.
"Is something amiss with your sister?"
he inquired gently. She shook her head, looking back up.
"Not at all. I believe she's in the drawing room, writing a letter to our cousin in Somerset. Ladies like to do that, you know."
He blinked.
"Do what?"
"Write letters. I'm not a very good correspondent myself," she said, her words coming forth in an oddly rushed fashion, "as I rarely have the patience to sit still at a desk long enough to write an entire letter, not to mention that my penmanship is abysmal. But most ladies spend a goodly portion of every day drafting letters."
He tried not to smile.
"You wanted to warn me that your sister likes to write letters?"
"No, of course not," she mumbled. "It's just that you asked if she was all right, and I said of course, and I told you where she was, and then we were entirely off the topic, and—"
He laid his hand across hers, effectively cutting her off.
"What is it you needed to tell me, Kate?"
He watched with interest as she steeled her shoulders and clenched her jaw. She looked as if she were preparing for a hideous task. Then, in one big rush of a sentence, she said,
"I just wanted you to know that I have withdrawn my objections to your suit of Edwina."
His chest suddenly felt a bit hollow.
"I see," he said,
not because he did see, just because he had to say something.
"I admit to a strong prejudice against you," she continued quickly, "but I have come to know you since my arrival at Aubrey Hall, and in all conscience, I could not allow you to go on thinking that I would stand in your way. It would not be right of me."
Anthony just stared at her, completely at a loss. There was, he realized dimly, something a bit deflating about her willingness to marry him off to her sister, since he'd spent the better part of the last 2 days fighting the urge to kiss her rather senseless. On the other hand, wasn't this what he wanted? Edwina would make the perfect wife. Kate would not. Edwina fit all the criteria he'd laid out when he'd finally decided it was time to wed. Kate did not. And he certainly couldn't dally with Kate if he meant to marry Edwina. She was giving him what he wanted. Exactly, he reminded himself, what he wanted. With her sister's blessing, Edwina would marry him next week if he so desired. Then why the devil did he want to grab her by the shoulders and shake and shake and shake until she took back every bloody little annoying word? It was that spark, that damnable spark that never seemed to dim between them, that awful prickle of awareness that burned every time she entered a room or took a breath or pointed a toe, that sinking feeling that he could, if he let himself, love her. Which was the one thing he feared most. Perhaps the only thing he feared at all. It was ironic. But death was the one thing he wasn't afraid of. Death wasn't frightening to a man alone. The great beyond held no terror when one had managed to avoid attachments here on earth. Love was truly a spectacular, sacred thing. Anthony knew that. He'd seen it every day of his childhood. Every time his parents had shared a glance or touched hands, But love was the enemy of the dying man. It was the only thing that could make the rest of his years intolerable. To taste bliss and know that it would all be snatched away. And that was probably why, when Antony finally reacted to her words, he didn't yank her to him and kiss her until she was gasping, and he didn't press his lips to her ear and burn his breath against her skin, making sure she understood that he was on fire for her and not her sister. Never her sister. Instead, he just looked at her impassively, his eyes far, far steadier than his heart, and said, "I am much relieved," all the while having the strangest feeling that he wasn't really there, but rather watching the entire scene. Nothing more than a farce, really, from outside of his body, all the while wondering what the hell was going on. She smiled weakly and said, "I thought you might feel that way."
"Kate, I..."
She'd never know what he meant to say. In all truth, he wasn't even sure what he intended to say. He hadn't even realized that he was going to speak until her name passed over his lips. But his words would remain forever unspoken, because at that moment he heard it. A low buzz. A whine, really. It was the sort of sound most people found mildly annoying. Nothing, to Antony, could have been more terrifying.
"Don't move,"
he whispered, his voice harsh with fear. Kate's eyes narrowed, and of course she moved, trying to twist about.
"What are you talking about? What is wrong?"
"Just don't move," he repeated.
Her eyes slid to the left, then her chin followed by a quarter of an inch or so.
"Oh, it's just a bee."
Her face broke out in a relieved grin, and she lifted her hand to swat it away.
"For goodness sake, Antony, don't do that again. You had me scared for a moment."
Antony's hand shot out and grasped her wrist with painful force.
"I said don't move," he hissed.
"Antony," she said, laughing, "it's a bee."
He held her immobile, his grasp hard and painful, his eyes never leaving the loathsome creature, watching as it buzzed purposefully around her head. He was paralysed by fear and fury and something else he couldn't quite put his finger on. It wasn't as if he hadn't come into contact with bees in the 11 years since his father's death. One couldn't reside in England, after all, and expect to avoid them altogether. Until now, in fact, he'd forced himself to flirt with them in an odd, fatalistic manner. He'd always suspected that he might be doomed to follow in his father's footsteps in all respects. If he was going to be brought down by a humble insect, by God, he'd do it standing firm and holding his ground. He was going to die sooner or, well, sooner, and he wasn't going to run from some bloody bug. And so, when one flew by, he laughed, he mocked, he cursed, and he swatted it away with his hand, daring it to retaliate. And he'd never been stung. But seeing one fly so dangerously close to Kate, brushing by her hair, landing on the lacy sleeve of her dress, it was terrifying, almost hypnotizing. His mind raced ahead, and he saw the tiny monster sink its stinger into her soft flesh. He saw her gasping for air, sinking to the ground. He saw her here at Aubrey Hall, laid out on the same bed that had served as his father's first coffin.
"Just be quiet," he whispered. "We're going to stand slowly. Then we're going to walk away."
"Antony," she said,
her eyes crinkling in an impatiently confused manner,
"what is wrong with you?"
He tugged on her hand, trying to force her to rise, but she resisted.
"It's a bee,"
she said in an exasperated voice.
"Stop acting so strangely. For heaven's sake, it's not going to kill me."
Her words hung heavy in the air, almost like solid objects, ready to crash to the ground and shatter them both. Then, finally, when Antony felt his throat relax enough to speak, he said in a low, intense voice,
"It might."
Kate froze, not because she meant to follow his orders, but because something in his aspect, something in his eyes, frightened her to the bone. He looked changed, possessed by some unknown demon. "Antony," she said, in what she hoped was an even, authoritative voice, "let go of my wrist this instant." She pulled, but he did not relent, and the bee kept buzzing relentlessly about her. "Antony," she exclaimed, "stop this right—" The rest of her sentence was lost, as she somehow managed to yank her hand from his crushing grasp. The sudden freedom left her off balance, and her arm flailed up and about, the inside of her elbow knocking into the bee, which let out a loud, angry buzz as the force of the blow sent it hurtling through space, smashing right into the strip of bare skin above the lace-edged bodice of her afternoon dress.
"Oh, for the love of... ow!"
Kate let out a howl as the bee, no doubt infuriated by its abuse, sank its stinger into her flesh.
"Oh, damn!"
she swore, completely past any pretensions toward proper language. It was just a bee sting, of course, and nothing she hadn't suffered several times before. But bloody hell, it hurt.
"Oh, bother!"
she grumbled, pulling her chin against her chest so she could look down and get the best view of the red welt rising right along the edge of her bodice.
"Now I'll have to go inside for a poultice, and it'll get all over my dress."
With a disdainful sniff, she brushed the dead carcass of the bee from her skirt, muttering,
"Well, at least he's dead, the vexing thing. It's probably the only justice in the..."
That was when she looked up and spied Antony's face. He'd gone white. Not pale, not even bloodless, but white.
"Oh, my God," he whispered,
and the oddest thing was that his lips didn't even move.
"Oh, my God."
"Antony,"
she asked, leaning forward and momentarily forgetting about the painful sting on her chest.
"Antony, what is wrong?"
Whatever trance he was in suddenly snapped, and he leaped forward, roughly grabbing one of her shoulders with one hand while his other grappled with the bodice of her gown, pulling it down to better expose her wound.
"My lord!"
Kate shrieked.
"Stop!"
He said nothing, but his breath was ragged and fast as he pinned her against the back of the bench, still holding her dress down, not low enough to expose her, but certainly lower than decency allowed.
"Antony,"
she tried, hoping that the use of his given name might get his attention. She didn't know this man. He wasn't the one who had sat at her side just 2 minutes earlier. He was crazed, frantic, and completely heedless of her protestations.
"Will you shut up?"
he hissed, never once looking up at her. His eyes were focused on the red, swollen circle of flesh on her chest, and with trembling hands he plucked the stinger from her skin.
"Antony, I'm fine,"
she insisted.
"You must,"
she gasped. He'd moved one of his hands slightly as he used the other to yank a handkerchief from his pocket, and it now rather indelicately cupped her entire breast.
"Antony, what are you doing?"
She grabbed at his hand, trying to remove it from her person, but his strength was beyond her. He pinned her even more firmly against the back of the bench, his hand nearly pressing her breast flat.
"Be still,"
he barked, and then he took the handkerchief and began to press against the swollen sting.
"What are you doing?"
she asked, still trying to scoot away. He didn't look up.
"Expressing the venom."
"Is there venom?"
"There must be," he muttered. "There has to be. Something is killing you."
Her mouth fell open.
"Something is killing me? Are you mad? Nothing is killing me. It's a bee sting."
But he ignored her, too focused on his self-appointed task of treating her wound.
"Antony,"
she said in a placating voice, trying to reason with him.
"I appreciate your concern, but I've been stung by bees at least a half dozen times, and I..."
"He'd been stung before too,"
he interrupted. Something about his voice sent a shiver down her spine.
"Who?"
she whispered. He pressed more firmly against the raised hive, dabbing the handkerchief against the clear liquid that oozed out.
"My father,"
he said flatly.
"And it killed him."
She couldn't quite believe it.
"A bee?"
"Yes, a bee," he snapped. "Haven't you been listening?"
"Antony, A little bee cannot kill a man.
He actually paused in his ministrations for a brief second to glance up at her. His eyes were hard, haunted.
I assure you that it can, he bit off.
Kate couldn't quite believe that his words were true, but she also didn't think he was lying, and so she held still for a moment, recognizing that he needed to treat her bee sting far more than she needed to scoot away from his attentions.
It's still swollen,
he muttered, pressing harder with the handkerchief.
I don't think I got it all out.
I'm sure I'll be fine, she said gently, her ire with him turning into an almost maternal concern.
His brow was wrinkled with concentration, and his movements still carried an air of frantic energy. He was petrified, she realized, scared that she would drop dead right there on the garden bench, felled by a tiny little bee. It seemed unfathomable, and yet it was true. He shook his head.
It's not good enough, he said hoarsely. I have to get it all out.
Anthony, what are you doing?
He'd tipped her chin back, and his head was closing the distance between them, almost as if he meant to kiss her.
I'm going to have to suck the venom out, he said grimly. Just hold still.
Anthony, she shrieked. You can't!
She gasped, completely unable to finish her sentence once she felt his lips settling on her skin, applying a gentle yet inexorable pressure, pulling her into his mouth. Kate didn't know how to respond, didn't know whether to push him away or pull him toward her. But in the end, she just froze, because when she lifted her head and looked over his shoulder, she saw a group of three women staring at them with equal expressions of shock. Mary, Lady Bridgerton, and Mrs. Featherington, arguably the Ton's biggest gossip. And Kate knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that her life would never be the same. Chapter 14. And indeed, if a scandal does erupt at Lady Bridgerton's party, those of us who remain in London may be assured that any and all titillating news shall reach our tender ears with all possible haste. With so many notorious gossips in attendance, we are all but guaranteed a full and detailed report. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 4th of May, 1814. For a split second, everyone remained frozen, as if in a tableau. Kate stared at the three matrons in shock. They stared back at her in utter horror. And Anthony kept trying to suck the venom from Kate's bee sting, completely oblivious to the fact that they had an audience. Of the quintet, Kate found her voice and her strength first, shoving with all her might against Anthony's shoulder as she let out an impassioned cry of, "Stop!" Caught off guard, he proved surprisingly easy to dislodge, and he landed on his bum on the ground, his eyes still burning with determination to save her from what he perceived as her deathly fate.
"Anthony!"
Lady Bridgerton gasped, her voice quavering on her son's name, as if she couldn't quite believe what she was seeing. He twisted around.
"Mother!"
"Anthony, what were you doing?"
"She was stung by a bee," he said grimly.
"I'm fine,"
Kate insisted, then yanked up her dress.
"I told him I was fine, but he wouldn't listen to me."
Lady Bridgerton's eyes misted over with understanding.
"I see," she said in a small, sad voice, and Anthony knew that she did see.
She was, perhaps, the only person who could see.
"Kate,"
Mary finally said, choking on her words,
"he had his lips on her breast,"
Mrs. Featherington said helpfully, folding her arms over her ample bosom. A disapproving frown crossed her face, but it was clear that she was enjoying herself immensely.
"He did not,"
Kate exclaimed, struggling to her feet, which wasn't the easiest task, since Anthony had landed on one of them when she'd shoved him off the bench.
"I was stung right here."
With a frantic finger, she pointed at the round, red welt that was still rising on the thin skin covering her collarbone. The three older ladies stared at her bee sting, their skin assuming identical blushes of faint crimson. "It's not anywhere near my breast," Kate protested, too horrified by the direction of the conversation to remember to feel embarrassed at her rather anatomical language.
"It isn't far," Mrs. Featherington pointed out. "Will someone shut her up?"
Anthony snapped.
"Well,"
Mrs. Featherington huffed.
"I never!"
"No," Anthony replied.
"You always!" "What does he mean by that?"
Mrs. Featherington demanded, poking Lady Bridgerton in the arm. When the Viscountess did not respond, she turned to Mary and repeated the question. But Mary had eyes only for her daughter.
"Kate," she ordered, "come here this instant."
Dutifully, Kate moved to Mary's side.
"Well?"
Mrs. Featherington asked.
"What are we going to do?"
Four sets of eyes turned on her in disbelief.
"We?"
Kate questioned faintly.
"I fail to see how you have any say in the matter,"
Anthony bit off. Mrs. Featherington just let out a loud, disdainful and rather nasal sniff.
"You have to marry the chit,"
she announced.
"What?"
The word was ripped from Kate's throat.
"You must be mad.
I must be the only sensible one in the garden, is what I must be,"
Mrs. Featherington said officiously.
"Ludgirl! He had his mouth on your puppies, and we all saw it."
"He did not," Kate moaned.
"I was stung by a bee. A bee!"
"Portia," Lady Bridgerton interjected, "I hardly think there is need for such graphic language."
"There's little use for delicacy now,"
Mrs. Featherington replied. "It's going to make a tidy piece of gossip, no matter how you describe it. The Ton's most fervent bachelor, brought down by a bee.
I must say, my lord, it's not how I imagined it."
"There is not going to be any gossip,"
Anthony growled, advancing on her with a menacing air, "because no one is going to say a word. I will not see Miss Sheffield's reputation besmirched in any way." Mrs. Featherington's eyes bugged out with disbelief.
"You think you can keep something like this quiet?"
"I'm not going to say anything, and I rather doubt that Miss Sheffield will either,"
he said, planting his hands on his hips as he glared down at her. It was the sort of stare that brought grown men to their knees, but Mrs. Featherington was either impervious or simply stupid. So he continued with,
"Which leaves our respective mothers, who would seem to have a vested interest in protecting our reputations. Which then leaves you, Mrs. Featherington, as the only member of our cosy little group who might prove herself a gossipy, loud-mouthed fishwife over this."
Mrs. Featherington turned a dull red.
"Anyone could have seen from the house,"
she said bitterly, clearly loath to lose such a prime piece of gossip. She'd be fated for a month as the only eyewitness to such a scandal. The only eyewitness who'd talk, that is. Lady Bridgerton glanced up at the house, her face going pale.
"She's right, Anthony," she said.
"You were in full view of the guest wing."
"It was a bee,"
Kate practically wailed.
"Just a bee. Surely we can't be forced to marry because of a bee."
Her outburst was met with silence. She looked from Mary to Lady Bridgerton, both of whom were gazing at her with expressions hovering between concern, kindness, and pity. Then she looked at Anthony, whose expression was hard, closed, and utterly unreadable. Kate closed her eyes in misery. This wasn't how it was supposed to happen. Even as she had told him he might marry her sister, she'd secretly wished he could be hers, but not like this. Oh, dear Lord, not like this. Not so he'd feel trapped. Not so he'd spend the rest of his life looking at her and wishing she was someone else.
"Anthony,"
she whispered. Maybe if he spoke to her, maybe if he just looked at her, she might glean some clue as to what he was thinking.
"We will marry next week," he stated.
His voice was firm and clear, but otherwise devoid of emotion.
"Oh, good,"
Lady Bridgerton said with great relief, clapping her hands together.
"Mrs. Sheffield and I will begin preparations immediately."
"Anthony," Kate whispered again, this time with more urgency.
"Are you certain?
She grabbed his arm and tried to pull him away from the matrons. She gained only a few inches, but at least now they weren't facing them. He gazed at her with implacable eyes.
"We will marry," he said simply,
his voice that of the consummate aristocrat, brooking no protest and expecting to be obeyed.
"There is nothing else to do."
"But you don't want to marry me," she said.
This caused him to raise a brow.
"And do you want to marry me?"
She said nothing. There was nothing she could say, not if she wanted to maintain even a shred of pride.
"I suspect we shall suit well enough,"
he continued, his expression softening slightly.
"We've become friends of a sort, after all. That's more than most men and women have at the beginning of a union."
"You can't want this," she persisted. "You wanted to marry Edwina. What are you going to say to Edwina?"
He crossed his arms.
"I never made any promises to Edwina. And I imagine we'll simply tell her we fell in love."
Kate felt her eyes rolling of their own volition.
"She'll never believe that."
He shrugged.
"Then tell her the truth. Tell her you were stung by a bee, and I was trying to aid you, and we were caught in a compromising position. Tell her whatever you want. She's your sister."
Kate sank back down onto the stone bench, sighing.
"No one is going to believe you wanted to marry me," she said. "Everyone will think you were trapped."
Antony shot a pointed glare at the three women, who were still staring at them with interest. At his...
"Would you mind?"
Both his and Kate's mothers stepped back several feet and turned around to afford them more privacy. When Mrs. Featherington did not follow immediately, Violet reached forward and nearly pulled her arm out of the socket. Sitting down next to Kate, he said,
"There is little we can do to prevent people from